And I'll call on Deacon Randy Foliard. He's going to bless us with a message on King Solomon.
Okay, well, let's all bow before Almighty Yahweh. Father Yahweh, we come before you. We thank you so much for bringing us here together to one place to worship you, to fellowship with those here. We pray, Father Yahweh, that what we do in this life may be found worthy of your calling, that we may strive to please you in all that we do. Help us to achieve, Father, that calling through the blood and redemption of your Son, Yahshua the Messiah. We thank you for all the blessings, and there's nothing we can do, Father, to show our gratitude to you for all that you've done. We thank you, and we dedicate this service once more to you. We pray that the words spoken here may be from your inspiration, your word, and not mine. And we ask this in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. I'd like to welcome everybody here. I think the lights are a little bit down from what it is normal, but that's fine. Today I'd like to speak on Solomon. There's a lot of examples in the Old Testament, some good, some not so good. But all of them we can learn something from. And Solomon is somewhat of a paradox. I've always found this man fascinating for multiple reasons. He was praised, he was exemplified, but also he was chastised and rebuked. So he is a man of contradiction. And a man, again, that we can learn a great deal from, both from his righteous examples and from his wicked examples. So I'd like to start with something more positive. So I'd like to start with his righteous examples and look at what this man did right and what we can learn from this king, King Solomon. So I'd like to begin with humility. Humility. If you, one moment here. There we go. If you could turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 9. I'd like to begin there. And we're probably all familiar with this passage. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5. It says there in Gibeon, Yahweh appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And Elohim said, "Ask what I shall give you." And Solomon said, "You have showed it to your servant David, my father, great loving kindness, according as he has walked before you in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. And you have kept for him this great loving kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day." It was always considered a blessing to have a son to sit on the throne after the king, after the father. Verse 7, "And now, Yahweh, my Elohim, you have made your servant king instead of David, my father. And I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in." So notice that. "I am but a little child." And then he asks in verse 8, "And your servant is among your people, which you have chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give your servant therefore an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this, your great people?" So we see here that he asks for wisdom. But we see something very special, I believe, before that, that many people sort of gloss over. And that is his humility. This man's a humbled man. And I think this is a lesson that we need to spend a few minutes with and understand why he was blessed. Notice how he responded to Almighty Yahweh. He said, "I am but a little child, a little child." I've always found this fascinating. Solomon here, he was humbled enough to recognize his own shortcomings, his own weaknesses. He realized that he was yet just a young man, a boy. And he was not up to the task of leading the people. So he asks for wisdom. But again, the fact that he was humbled enough to admit, to confess that he was not up to the task, that he was not worthy, that he did not have the necessary skills to lead these people. Again, humility, being humbled. It's so important for Yahweh's people. Turn to Proverbs chapter 11, or you can just read it on the board with me. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 2. And there, Solomon, again, keep in mind, Solomon wrote most of the Proverbs, not all, but most. And here in Proverbs 11, verse 2, he says, "When pride comes, then comes shame. But with the lowly is wisdom." So what do we find here? We find two attributes. Number one, pride. And number one, lowly or humility. So what do we find about these two attributes? Or number one, we find that pride equates to what? Shame. Shame. When we're full of pride, we bring shame. Or what do we find about the lowly, the humbled? What do we find? It says that the humbled receives wisdom. Now, why is this? Why is pride shameful and humility brings wisdom? Why is this? Or think about it for just a moment. Pride, what is pride? A person full of pride will refuse to take instruction. A person full of pride will refuse to admit their mistakes. A person full of pride is not workable. Almighty Yahweh can't work with a person full of pride. So ultimately, what does it do? It brings shame. I've seen a lot of people in my short life full of pride, unwilling to admit they're wrong, unwilling to admit their mistakes, and it's ruined them. It's ruined their life simply because they cannot come to grips that they are infallible, or that they are fallible, I should say, that they do make mistakes. It's so important as Yahweh's people that we're humbled, that we're willing to admit our shortcomings, our inadequacies, that we're willing and able to receive correction when necessary, because after all, that's what the truth is all about, isn't it? To grow in truth and Yahweh's word. That's why we're here. You know, one area that humility I've learned in the last few years is so important is marriage. This is true, though, in any relationship. Humility. You know, in a marriage, I believe so often that marriage ends or fails because of one reason, and that is because one or both spouses cannot admit their mistakes. They hold on to that old animosity. They refuse to admit that they are wrong. And as a result, that marriage is in chaos. A lot of men are accustomed to doing this, especially in the faith. They believe that they are the head of the house. In Scripture, they are. But this does not mean that they are not fallible. We're all fallible. We all make mistakes. We need to be willing to confess those mistakes when they are made. And again, how is this done? How is this done? It's through humility. It's through being humbled and being able to realize and recognize that we're all sinners according to Yahweh's word. Yahweh's word says that if we say that we have no sin, we lie, because we all have sin. So it's so important that we're humbled. And again, this is why Solomon was blessed. It's not because there was a dream. It's not because he asked for humility or for wisdom. He was blessed because in the way he asked, it was humbled, as a humbled petition. And he was blessed for that, and Yahweh blessed him with wisdom. Turn to Proverbs 22:4 with me. Proverbs 22:4. And there in Proverbs 22:4, it says, "And by knowledge are the chambers filled with all precious and pleasant riches." Now, I think I have my notes wrong, so let's go to the PowerPoint here. Proverbs 11:2. I'm not sure where I got this Proverbs 22:4, but Proverbs 11:2 says something about pride. It says, "When pride comes, then brings shame." 22:4. "The reward of humility and the fear of Yahweh is riches and honor and life." Proverbs 22:4. Apologize for that. But Solomon says here that we receive three blessings when we're humbled. And we know that he received all three of these blessings. We receive, he says, riches, honor, and life. And we know that he physically received all these blessings in his life. But I want to point out here that this does not always mean that we receive these blessings here or now. I believe that this is pointing to something greater, something in the future, Yahweh's kingdom. Think about it for just a moment. What will we have in Yahweh's kingdom? We will have riches, we will have honor, we will have eternal life in his kingdom beyond anything we can compare to today. So again, humility is so important. I want to impress upon you today how important humility is and why Solomon was blessed. Again, we need to go to the root cause of why he was blessed. And he was not blessed because he was a young man. He was not blessed because he asked for wisdom. He was blessed in the way he asked. He asked in humility. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 4 with me. We know that he asked for wisdom, and we also know that he received that wisdom. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. And in this passage, we find that he was blessed with great wisdom. It says, "And Elohim gave Solomon wisdom and understanding very much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all man, than Etham, the Ezrahite, and Hermin, the Kukul, and Dada, the son of Melchol. And his fame was in all the surrounding nations all around." Verse 32 says, "And he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. And he spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that springs out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of creeping things and of fishes. And there came to all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom." So what do we find here? We find that the petition was given to Solomon from Almighty Yahweh. He received great wisdom. So much so, it says that men came to hear his wisdom from the surrounding nations. They would come for hundreds of miles to hear this man speak, to hear his wisdom, to hear his understanding. You know, there's one truth about wisdom. Solomon understood this, and that is that wisdom does not proceed from us. That's an important concept to understand. Wisdom does not proceed from man. Wisdom proceeds from Almighty Yahweh. Do you understand that? Solomon understood it. Wisdom doesn't come from our own intellect, from our own mind. Wisdom comes from our Father in heaven. You know, a lot of PhDs, they will never understand this. They will never understand where wisdom proceeds from, where it comes from. True wisdom is not found in man's knowledge. It's not found in today's universities. We can learn, we can achieve knowledge, but that does not mean that we're wise in the way we use it. Turn to Proverbs. Proverbs 2, verse 1 with me. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 1 says, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and lay up my commandments with thee, so as to incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thy heart to understanding, yea, if thou cry after discernment and lift up thy voice for understanding. If thou seek her as silver and search for her as hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of Yahweh and find the knowledge of Elohim. For Yahweh gives wisdom." Notice that. Yahweh gives wisdom. Out of his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He lays up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to them that walk in integrity. So let me ask you again, who gives wisdom? Or what do we find here in this proverb? It says here that Yahweh gives wisdom. Yahweh is the one that provides a wisdom, not man. Now, notice that Yahweh says something. He says that we're to seek for wisdom as we would silver. Now, how do we do this? And what is this referring to? Yahweh doesn't give wisdom without effort. I believe that this is a message, what we find. Yahweh does not give it wisdom without effort. Or what do we read in James chapter 2? Faith without works is dead. Many people believe we simply need to believe, simply have to have faith, and that's all we need. Or we know here there's more to it than faith alone. We need to do something to show our faith. By our actions, we show our faith. We show what we believe by what we do. Wisdom is no different. Yahweh gives wisdom. But we must seek for wisdom. We must want wisdom. We must strive to live for Almighty Yahweh to gain this wisdom. So you see, we must do something. We must do something. Or what must we do? What must we do to achieve this wisdom? Verse 1 said, "Lay up my commandments with you." Or that's number 1. If we humbly live by Yahweh's word, we will be blessed with wisdom, with his understanding. And again, keep in mind that this is not something we can ascertain here on earth through the knowledge of man. When it comes to wisdom and knowledge, there's an important distinction to understand. And that distinction is understanding and wisdom are different. Knowledge is information. I can learn knowledge in many different places. I can learn knowledge in college. I can learn knowledge on the job. I can learn knowledge from friends, from associates, from the TV. But wisdom is different. Wisdom is applying that knowledge. You understand the difference? Wisdom is applying the information we gather. I've seen a lot of people, they have a lot of knowledge. They have a lot of understanding, a lot of information. But they don't have the wisdom to apply that information, that knowledge. And this is why, again, wisdom proceeds from Almighty Yahweh. It is the discretion that Yahweh blesses His people with. There's a distinction, and it's important to understand that distinction. Wisdom can't be found in a book. It can't be found in academia. Wisdom is found right here through the pages of Yahweh's Word. Solomon's wisdom was not his own. It was a blessing from Almighty Yahweh. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 11 says this, "For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared unto it. I, wisdom, have made prudence my dwelling, and find out knowledge and discretion." So here we find the value of wisdom. The worth. What is wisdom worth? Solomon says here that wisdom is worth more than rubies. So what does this mean? You know, some things like wisdom is really beyond value. You can't put a value on wisdom. The best thing I can compare this to is the life of maybe your spouse, or the life of a child. You know, there's no amount of wealth or abundance or treasure on the face of this earth to compare to the life of your spouse or the life of your child. There's nothing that's priceless. There is no amount you can apply to a gift like your own child. And the same thing is true with wisdom. You can't apply a cost to wisdom. And that's what we find here. That's what Solomon is saying. We can't apply cost to wisdom. It is something that Yahweh gives to His people. It is something that we receive through blessings. And again, we receive this wisdom through living Yahweh's Word. We know in the beginning, Solomon's reign, Solomon's life, he sought Yahweh. He sought Yahweh with a pure heart. We can all remember the prayer, him asking Yahweh to forgive in this case and forgive in that case and forgive if the brother does wrong and forgive if we seek after pagan mighty ones and forgive. And he is a whole page, whole chapter of him asking for forgiveness at the dedication of the temple. This man's heart was right. He sought and pursued Yahweh's truth. And as a result, he was blessed with wisdom. But we know, and we're going to see later, that he retracted, or Yahweh retracted some of that wisdom as he pulled away from his Father in heaven. It's an important point. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 16. I'd like to move on and look at the judicial insight that this man had. So we know that he was humbled, and that's a blessing. We know that he received greater wisdom. That's a blessing, and it's something we can learn from. But with that wisdom, with that humility, he also received another gift. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 16 says, "Then there came two women that were harlots unto the king, and stood before him. And the one woman said, O my sovereign, I and this woman dwell in one house. And I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass a third day after I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also. And we were together, there was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. And this woman's child died in the night, because she lay upon it, and she arose at midnight, and took my son from beside me while my handmaid slept, and laid it in her bosom, and laid her dead child in my bosom." Or I can't even begin to try to fathom such an account as this. What a horrible story. How is Solomon going to handle this? Verse 21 says, "And when I arose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. But when I looked at it in the morning, behold, it was not my son whom I bear. And the other woman said, Nay, but the living is my son, and the dead is thy son. And this said, No, But the dead is thy son, and the living is my son. Thus they spake before the king. Then said the king, the one saith, this is my son that liveth, and my son is the dead. And the other saith, nay, but thy son is the dead, and my son is the living. Then said the king, the one saith, this is my son that liveth, and thy son is the dead. And the other saith, nay, but the son is the dead, and my son is the living. So what is the king going to do here? Verse 25, and the king said, divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other. Then spake the woman whose living child was unto the king, for her heart yearned over her son. And she said, oh, my master, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, it shall be neither mine nor thine, divide it. Then the king answered and said, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. She is a mother thereof. And Israel heard the judgment which king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of Elohim was in him to do justice. And I've always found this account fascinating. Here we have two women claiming the same child, saying that the one child is theirs. How would Solomon decide this case? We find how he decided the case. You know, Solomon, through his wisdom, he knew how the real mother would react or respond with his verdict. And that was the wisdom of Solomon. You know, any mother or father who loved their child would rather lose that child than to see harm come to that child. And again, through Solomon's wisdom, through his ability to discern, he understood this. He understood who the true mother was when the other said, cut the child in half. It wasn't her child. She had no love for the child, and he understood that. So we find here, through his humility, through Solomon humbly asking for wisdom, he was given wisdom. And with that wisdom, he also received judicial insight. So you see, we find a progression here. We find humility, we find wisdom, and with that we find the ability to judge righteously. Proverbs chapter 28, verse 5, again a proverb written by Solomon. He said, evil men understand not justice, but they that seek Yahweh understand all things. Evil men, corrupt men, are unable to understand or comprehend justice. Why? Why? Or what does the word justice mean? It's number 4941 in Strong's. It's mishpat, the Hebrew word. And the Strong's defines this word as a verdict pronounced judicially, especially a sentence or formal decree, human or divine law, including the act, the place, the suit, the crime, and the penalty. So why, again, is an evil man unable to understand this justice, this mishpat, this verdict? Why? What is it about justice that an evil man cannot understand? Or simple. You see, the concept of justice is based on one foundation, one principle, and that is righteousness. Righteousness. This is why those who are evil are unable to understand the concept, the principle of justice. Why? Because they do not understand the moral foundation of righteousness. You see, you understand why evil men cannot understand justice. Why do you suppose we have so many problems in our own judicial system today? We have places like Vermont who are giving child molesters a few months in probation and nothing more. And the list goes on, and the injustices, abortion, that's just unbelievable. Judgments anymore not based on righteousness in this nation. They're based on man's opinion. They're based on an opinion of a person, and that is it. There's nothing more to it. There's no righteousness. There's no moral foundation. When this nation was established, judges and the people of this nation had a moral foundation to base the judgments on. Today we're losing that. Why do you think you see such different verdicts in places like San Francisco and Jefferson City, Missouri? Is they're in contradiction of one another. Why? Because the standard is not the same. the standard is not the same, but it should be. And that's what Solomon is saying here. The standard should be the same. It should be based on righteousness. Solomon also said here that a man who seeks Yahweh understands all things. What is he referring to? Wisdom. Wisdom. Understanding. Wisdom. You know, people who refuse to obey Yahweh, and I've always found this sort of a sad tragedy in our nation and the world. People who refuse to obey Almighty Yahweh, they make life way too complicated. Way too complicated. Every day, people are looking and searching for a purpose, for a meaning. They can't find it. People are miserable. They can't find it. They're not happy. If you would take a poll of how many people are happy in this nation, you would probably find very few are happy, are fulfilled. A person who seeks Yahweh, they know where to find purpose. They know where to find fulfillment. Matter of fact, it was Solomon of all people who defined, I believe, the purpose or meaning of life. In Ecclesiastes 12:13, he said that the whole of man was to fear Yahweh. And we know that we're to fear Almighty Yahweh. We're to fear Him. And to keep His commandments. This is the whole of man, Solomon said. And I believe this is also the purpose and meaning of life. But again, these people who have no regard for Almighty Yahweh, they have no concept of fulfillment. I know so many people in the world, and they're lost. They're lost, but they refuse to obey. And they're always looking for something and never able to find that something. And there's a reason why. Almighty Yahweh is the only answer we can ever find who will bring fulfillment. He's it. I'd like to look at some wicked examples, some bad examples. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 22. Now, this is certainly not one of Solomon's most significant detriments, but it is one. 1 Kings 4:22, it says, "And Solomon's provision for one day was 30 measures of fine flour and 80 measures of meal, 10 fat oxen and 20 oxen out of the pastures, and 100 sheep, besides harts and gazelles and roebucks and fatted fowl." Again, keep in mind that this was one day's food supply for Solomon. Now, we all know that this man was wise. He was gifted. He had understanding, but we also find that he was rich beyond measure. More rich, possibly, than any other king in Israel's history. Remember what Joshua said about the rich man. He said it's easier for that rich for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. You know, as wise as Solomon was, from all accounts, he allowed some of his riches, some of what he had, his possessions, to distract him from Almighty Yahweh. Now, again, this was not his most significant problem, but was a problem. You see what happens when we allow wealth to enter in, and when we make that our goal, we lose our focus. And again, I've seen many examples of this, people who put wealth, who put possessions, who put careers first, and that is their goal. That is the reason they're here on this earth. And what happens is we lose focus. We turn away from Almighty Yahweh instead of focusing on Him. We focus instead on that career, on that treasure, and on that wealth, whatever it might be. We know that Paul said that the love of money was the root of all kinds of evil. And certainly, if you look back at the history of mankind, most of man's problems are the result of money. Might not be the dollar bill, might be a peso, might be a gold coin in the time of Abraham. But it's always been the problem, money. Whatever form that money's in, it's always been the problem for mankind. Again, sometimes as human beings, you know, we're better off as a pauper and not a king. Better off to live simple sometimes than to live lavishly, as we find here with Solomon. So it's important to realize the dangers of wealth so that we don't fall into this trap. Again, to be honest, this was not Solomon's weakness, significant weakness. He had others. But I do believe it was a distraction. And one reason he allowed possibly some of the other sins to enter in. But the lesson, I believe, here is for us. The average person could not handle what Solomon possessed, what he had. They would have corrupted his ways, as we find through the teachings of Yahshua. Deuteronomy chapter 17:17, the latter part here, it says something about lavish living. And understand that this is speaking specifically to king, to a king. It's not speaking to you and I. It was speaking to an Israelite king. And it says here, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. This is in the Torah. This is in Yahweh's law. He commanded that a king of Israel was not to acquire or amass or multiply great amounts of wealth. So why did he give this a command? What was the reason? Or money means power. Money means power. Was Solomon guilty of this command? Did he amass great amounts of wealth? Yes, he did. But again, he never allowed it to consume him. So this really wasn't Solomon's issue. He had other problems, which we're going to look at in a few minutes. But nonetheless, he did go against the command. Yahweh commands in the Torah, do not amass great amounts of wealth. Do not multiply to yourself silver and gold. Why? Because again, money means power. And we can see this in our political world today. You know, most cases, a candidate with the most money will win the election. The Fox News, they were showing some polls on who would win the election for the Democrats, whether Hillary Clinton or others would come out victorious. And the synopsis was, from all the commentators, is whoever had the most money would win. And that is true in politics today. That's true in most instances today. Money is power. You see, Yahweh wanted to keep the abuse of power out of his kingdom. He understood that a king already had power. And with that money or that abundance that he would accumulate, that would give him more power and that would lead to abuse. And we're certainly seeing that in this nation today with politics. It's sad, but money does corrupt. It corrupts most people. You see, money, again, equates to power. Power often equates to abuse, and not to mention the neglect of those things which are more important, the neglect of Yahweh's truth, the neglect of His word. And that's so important to understand. I want to focus now on Solomon's most significant problem, and that is found in 1 Kings 11, verse 1. It says, there now King Solomon loved many foreign women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. All the nations concerning which Yahweh said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go among them, neither shall they come among you, for surely they will turn your heart after their Elohim. Solomon clave unto these in love, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. So what do we find here? We find that Solomon had weakness, a weakness for women. Solomon had an obsession for women and carnality as a whole. And this is the problem, and this was the very sin that caused him to turn from Almighty Yahweh. You know, Paul in the New Testament encouraged those who could remain as him to do so. Why? Why did Paul encourage those who could remain single to do so? Why? What's the purpose? You see, like wealth, when we have a spouse or even a family, we tend to pull ourselves away from Yahweh's truth. We become distracted. And it happens to everybody. Now, understand that there's nothing wrong with marriage. I'm not trying to condemn marriage. Marriage is a wonderful blessing. It's a wonderful blessing. Yahweh instituted marriage. There's not a greater blessing in this life, in my opinion, than marriage. Having a wonderful wife, wonderful children, there's not a greater blessing. But there's also something to be said about being single. Paul understood this. You know, when we're not married, we're not concerned about pleasing our spouse. We have no spouse to please. We're not concerned about our children. And as a result, we're not concerned about the world and what we can achieve for them. Now, the problem, though, with Solomon is he had no concept of balance with marriage. You know, instead of taking one wife from his own people, this man, or he took more than one. He took more than, he took many, 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 many wives. We can read here he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Can you imagine? Can you imagine having 700 wives, you husbands? I can't hardly handle one sometimes, but let me explain the concept of a concubine for just a moment. It's important to understand this. In Middle Eastern culture, a concubine was considered somewhat of a secondary a wife. In other words, a concubine was considered a legal spouse, but not equal to the wife. With all the research I've done, that's the definition I can find. So he had basically 1,000 spouses. That's a one-to-many relationship there. That's too many for me. But again, this was Solomon's most significant mistake. This was his downfall. If he had any weakness at all, it was what we find here. But it was a big weakness. It was a big weakness. One thing led to another, and one thing led to another. And one point I want to make here is that many marriages, many of these marriages with Solomon were probably the result of political arrangement. That's something also you need to understand. Oftentimes, to secure the borders or relationships between two nations, they would give their sons or daughters in marriage. That would strengthen that nation. The problem, though, with that is this. Instead of Solomon relying on Almighty Yahweh to enlarge, to defend his nation, instead he took it upon himself to do it his way, to find a solution on his own. And that's another lesson we find here. We must have faith that Yahweh will provide. Sometimes when we try to find a solution to a problem, when we try to do it our own way, we only make the problem worse. I've done that myself. Sometimes the best thing is to go to Yahweh, to ask for His help, and give Yahweh time to work the problem out. Because oftentimes, He will, and He can. Certainly He can. You know, in some ways, Solomon lacked in faith. He had the wisdom. He had the understanding. He had the knowledge. But I believe in some ways he lacked the faith. And again, this shows that there's a difference between wisdom and faith. Wisdom, again, is applying knowledge. And faith is a blind on purpose here, blind assurance in Almighty Yahweh. Remember in Hebrews that faith is defined in this way. Assurance of things hoped for, a conviction of things not seen. Not seen, meaning we can't see it. We have no way of seeing Almighty Yahweh. We have no way of knowing scientifically that He exists, but we have faith that He does. We believe without evidence, without physical proof. That's why faith is blind in many ways. But Solomon, he had a problem with this. He wanted to do it his way. He thought his solutions would be better. So many of the marriages, I'm sure, were political marriages. He wanted to secure the border. He wanted to enlarge the territory. The problem with that, again, instead of allowing Yahweh to lead the nation, instead of allowing Yahweh to lead His people, he instead tried to do it his way. And we know that it was a disaster. Turn to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Verse 1 says, when Yahweh thy Elohim shall bring thee into the land where you go to possess, and shall cast out many nations before you, the Hittite, the Girgashite, the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when Yahweh thy Elohim shall deliver them up before thee, and thou shalt smite them, then thou shalt utterly destroy them. Thou shalt not make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Now notice verse 3 here. Verse 3 says, neither shall you make marriages with them. Your daughter you shall not give unto his son, nor his daughter shall you take unto thy son. For he will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other Elohim. So will the anger of Yahweh be kindled against you, and he will destroy you quickly. But thus shall you deal with him. You shall break down their altars, and dash in pieces their pillars, and hew down their Asherim, and burn their graven images with fire. So what do we find? We find here that Yahweh forbade Israel to marry with seven specific nations. Why? Why did he give this command? Their heathen religion. Yahweh understood human nature. And he knew and understood that if these people would engage in marriage with these nations, that their hearts would turn from him. Everything Yahweh does, and this is another lesson in Yahweh's word as a whole, everything he does is for a purpose. Yahweh does nothing for naught. Everything he does, every command he gives, everything he does is for a purpose. And that's so important to understand. Yahweh doesn't do anything for no reason at all. Again, in this scenario, he knew the consequences that these marriages would bring. He knew what would happen. And sure enough, what happened in Israel's history? What happened? This happened. It turned their hearts away from Almighty Yahweh. Deuteronomy chapter 17:17 again gives a command, and this is again specific to a king. And here's what Yahweh says, neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turns not away. Now this was a command given in a passage specifically given to the kings of Israel. And what do we find? We find that Yahweh forbade many wives. He said, don't do it. Why? Again, because they're going to turn your heart away from me, he said. They're going to turn you away from your first love, as we find in Revelation with the seven assemblies. Again, there's a reason why Yahweh gave this command. Yahweh knows the nature of man. He knows man, and he understands how man is deceived. Did Solomon obey this commandment? Did Solomon obey this commandment? Nope, he had his 700 wives and 300 concubines, 1,000 spouses. All 1,000. No, he disobeyed. Now, how did this impact Solomon? What happened? What happened to Solomon? I'd like to close looking at this last sin and the result of his life, of this carnality. Was Solomon led astray by his many foreign wives? Turn with me to, or look here, 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 4. It says there, for it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart from other Elohim. And his heart was not perfect with Yahweh his Elohim, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the mighty one of the Sidonians, and Malcham, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did that which was evil in the sight of Yahweh. Here's the contradiction. Here's the paradox of Solomon. He began righteous. He was a man full of wisdom, full of knowledge, full of understanding. He sought Yahweh. He asked for forgiveness. But here he is doing evil in the sight of Yahweh. And it says, continues on, it says, and went not fully after Yahweh as did his father. Then did Solomon build a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and the mount that is before Jerusalem, and for Moloch, the abomination of the children of Ammon. I want to stop just for one moment here. We are all familiar with Moloch, I hope, this deity. To honor this deity, the people of this nation would throw their babies into this fire, and the fire would consume their babies while they were yet alive. And this is the way they honored this deity. And Solomon is honoring Moloch. It's amazing. It's amazing how a man who began so righteous could have allowed himself to slip as he did here. I can't imagine, I mean, we can read this, but can you really fathom in your own mind how a man began in his status and progressed to what we find right here? I can't. It just amazes me how this man did what he did. Verse 8 says, and so did he for all his foreign wives. It didn't stop with Chemosh or Moloch or any of these other false deities. He did this for all 1,000 of his foreign wives, for his foreign spouses. He committed abomination. He served their Elohims. What does Yahweh's word say about this? Exodus chapter 20, verse 1, the foundation of the commandments. Yahweh's 10 commandments. what Moses received on the mount, it says, and Elohim spoke all these words, saying, I am Yahweh, thy Elohim, who brought you out of the house of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. What does he say in verse 3? Something very simple, something a child could understand. Thou shalt have no other Elohim before me. No other mighty one. I'm it. No other mighty one. This is the very first commandment. And Solomon disobeyed. What a simple command. You know, follow me. Don't worship other mighty ones. Don't worship other deities. Follow me alone. Very simple command. Solomon had a hard time with this command. It's the very foundation of his word. Thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image, nor any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the heaven above, or under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them, nor serve them, for I, Yahweh, thy Elohim, am a jealous Elohim, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and upon the fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing loving kindness unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandment. So here's the paradox. Here's the contradiction with this man called Solomon. We've learned a great deal from this man. We've learned what it means to be humbled. We've learned what it means to have wisdom. We've learned what it means to show justice. But here we are in the very end, and we're seeing some horrible characteristics, some horrible attributes. How could a man again begin so humbled, so passionate with Yahweh's word, wanting to do things right, asking for forgiveness, to what we find here? How could he allow this? I've always wondered this. How could a man with his wisdom, it says that people would come from other nations to hear this man speak. He was so wise and understanding, and yet in the end, he allowed his many wives to pull him away from Almighty Yahweh. You know, you can be the wisest person on the face of the earth, and if you do not have a devotion to Almighty Yahweh, you can still fall short in the end. Everything you did could be for naught. And if there's any lesson maybe with Solomon's life, maybe it's that. That no matter who we are, no matter what we know, no matter how wise we are, no matter what education we may have, no matter who or what position we hold, we can all fall short. We can all miss the mark. Solomon missed it. Wisdom alone does not save. Knowledge alone does not save. Faith alone does not save. A humbled, a contrite, an obedient heart saves. Even with all his wisdom, Solomon broke some important commandments. First commandment, have no other mighty ones. Made some significant mistakes that caused him to do evil in the end. This happened as Solomon, it could happen to us. The sad fact about Solomon is that through all his many wonderful attributes, and there were many, many wonderful characteristics this man possessed, it was one that brought this man down. One attribute destroyed this man. One attribute caused this man to do evil in Yahweh's eyes. And that's the tragedy of Solomon. In many ways, I admire this man. You know, we can learn a lot from his Proverbs. Ecclesiastics is my favorite book in the Old Testament. So much wisdom. We can learn so much from this book. But yet, we can also learn a lot from what he did wrong and what not to do. He allowed his flesh to make some horrible decisions, which followed him until the day he died. And that's another scriptural principle, and that is we can make one decision, and that decision can follow us. So it's so important as we live every day that we make the right decisions, that we understand the consequences to what we do and how we behave and how we act. Solomon may have had more potential than any other person in the Old Testament. Think about what this man had. And he allowed his carnality to stifle that potential, to bring it to an end. You know, I've seen money, I've seen carnal passion, obsessions all destroy great people of faith. People who had a fire, who had a passion for Almighty Yahweh. But for whatever reason, they allowed their flesh, their carnality, the pulls, whatever it was, and it's different for different people. But they've been pulled away, so it can happen. You and I are not immune to the backsliding of man. Solomon wasn't. And maybe this is why Paul said to work out your own salvation in fear and trembling. Trepidation. People say this simply means, oh, just respect Almighty Yahweh. No, it means more than respect. We better fear Almighty Yahweh. If we're not fearing our Maker, there's something wrong. Now, we shouldn't walk around trembling always. We know that He's also a loving, mighty one. But when we do something wrong, we should fear and tremble before His presence. Let's think about the examples that we've looked at this Sabbath and understand what Solomon did right and what Solomon did wrong, so that we follow in his examples and refrain from repeating others. Let's make it our goal to humbly live a life of devotion and faith to the one we worship. Let's be humbled. Let's seek wisdom and always put Yahweh first and foremost. May Yahweh bless you.